But right now, going to be joined by a good friend of the program, Golf Channel analyst Brandel Chamblee, former PGA Tour player himself, and going to take a look back to last week's amazing story of Tom Watson at Turnberry. Brandel, good morning to you. Thank you so much for joining me.
Yeah, nice to be here. Good morning to you guys.
Absolutely. So I was watching last week the British Open at Turnberry. We had that phenomenal story of Tom Watson, 59 years old. I thought the symmetry was phenomenal because he was returning to a place that he had won at 32 years prior in what many think was the greatest British Open of all time, the Duel in the Sun against Jack Nicklaus. I wouldn't say necessarily that I'm a Tom Watson fan. After this week, I was, but I was rooting for him so much, and then he misses the 8-footer for par on 18 on Sunday, drops into the playoff, loses by 6 strokes to Stewart Sink. Were you as disappointed as I was that Tom wasn't able to close the deal last week?
Yeah, I was deeply emotionally invested in that outcome. I was crushed, and I don't know Tom that well. I've played with him a few times on tour. I've been to dinner with him a few times, but I really don't know him that well. But just the story was unimaginable. I mean, there was really even no way to put it into context because nothing approaching that story had ever been duplicated on any sport, in any sport on any level. So, I thought when he hit the second shot from the 18th fairway, it was over. As soon as the ball landed, I thought, that's it. He's going to win this thing, and they're going to be talking about this 500 years from now, as long as there's air in people's lungs and they're playing golf.
Absolutely. Now, you know, unfortunately, the 8-iron he hit on 18, that was a good shot. It just ran through the green just a little too much, and then he took putter from the rough and rolled it past about 8 feet and, as I mentioned, couldn't make that comebacker. Now, and I got the feeling going into Sunday last week, into the final round, I felt, and I don't know if you felt the same way or if you noticed this, I had a feeling that most people watching this tournament had more faith in Watson finishing the deal and closing the deal than we did a year ago with Greg Norman, considering, you know, the many 54-hole leads that Greg had given up in the past. And listen, Greg's story last year at Birkdale was phenomenal as well, finishing third behind Padraig and Ian Poulter. But did you have a sense that the Tom Watson story this year at Turnberry was even bigger than Greg Norman last year at Birkdale?
Well, yes and no. I mean, to your first point about, you know, Watson, or feeling like Watson might close the deal out as opposed to Norman. I mean, it was the second year in a row we were teased with a story like that, so we were a little bit more used to the idea of an elder statesman pulling one of these things out. But, you know, the golf course, although very difficult, didn't have as many awkward tee shots as Birkdale. Birkdale was just brutal. And Norman never would back off that driver on the sixth hole on Sunday. He had driver, and the minute he pulled that club out, the minute on Sunday he pulled driver out on six, or seven, I can't remember which one it is, I knew there was no way he was going to win the golf tournament. As much as I hate to see that, as much as I was pulling for it. With regard to Watson, you know, the golf course wasn't particularly long, but the minute he made birdie on the ninth hole on Friday, and then the 11th hole on Friday, I went, you know what? He could pull this thing out. He's hitting it as far as anybody else. He's hitting it as good as anybody else. And everybody's always looking for that magic with a putter, and it looked to me like he had it.
Yeah, and then unfortunately that super tentative stroke on 18. Brandel Chamblee, Golf Channel analyst, joining me here. Russ Evans with you, Golf Exchange, presented by the Honda Classic, looking back to last weekend's 138th edition of the British Open, and it's taken us 4 minutes here before finally mentioning the guy that won, Stewart Sink, and, you know, he earned it. Give him credit. He did shoot the 1-under par 69 in regulation, birdieing 18, I think one of only three players on during the final round to birdie that hole. Gets himself into the playoff and then played exceptionally well. Two birdies and two pars, 2-under par aggregate through four holes, winning by 6 strokes over Watson, who was 4-over through those four holes. It was, Sink wasn't really a guy I don't think anyone saw coming. We were all focused on Ross Fisher and Lee Westwood and Watson and Retief Goosen and Jim Furyk, and all of a sudden, a guy I don't think anyone considered going into Sunday's final round was there. And I think unfortunately for him, he is the guy that took down this story that everyone was cheering for, so he's almost like the default enemy.
Well, I mean, the story at the top was of such magnitude, it was so enormous that there really wasn't a whole lot of people looking anywhere else. I mean, yeah, you could look at the heavyweights like Lee Westwood, who knocked on the door so many times, but there were a number of players lurking. And if anybody stumbled and you start looking, I always joke that the one who wins usually is the one who cares least. I don't mean that they're out there playing cavalier golf. I just mean that it's the one who is calm, who doesn't have the whole world looking at him, who is not pressed to win the event. And I thought, if given the players right at the lead, and you go all the way back, Stuart Seek even spoke to this in his press conference. For whatever reason, he felt the calmness that day. And I thought he hit the nail on the head. He said, inevitably, the people that win majors always speak about having a calm on Sunday. And most of the runners-up, they talk about the pressure that they felt. Or if they don't talk about it, then it was certainly evident early on in their play. And you could see that in the last two or three groups.
Right. Now, Lee Westwood, you alluded to him. He bogeys 18, and he had a phenomenal shot from the fairway bunker just to get himself on the green. Had 60 feet for birdie, and obviously you could tell what he was thinking. Watson at that point was on the tee at 18 at 3 under par. Westwood figured he needed to make this birdie putt to tie Watson. He didn't think Watson would bogey 18 to drop him down to 2 under. So Westwood, unfortunately for him, 3 putts, drops down to 1 under, does not make it into the playoff. In the playoff, Watson starts off with a bogey, and then was downhill from there. I just didn't think, I think to me, it seemed like Watson was on fumes, exhausted from the week that was, didn't have much to give. If Westwood had been able to make himself into that playoff and it was a three-way dynamic, do you think things would have been different?
Yeah, I mean, you never know how it's going to turn out if Westwood's in there. That's purely conjecture. I mean, Westwood's mistake was finding the bunker off of the tee. So it took a heroic effort just to get it anywhere on the green. If he'd have found the fairway, then obviously he'd have had a much better chance of getting it up there, in the range that Stuart Sink did. Stuart Sink went on to make birdie. Westwood could have maybe won this thing outright. So he's going to be chewing on this one for a long, long time. It's going to be hard for him to swallow. But with regards to the playoff, I just think that if you look at the past history of sudden death playoffs, the guys who birdie 18 to get into it, the guys who bogey 18 get into it, there seems to always be a lopsided percentage of victories to the guy who makes a birdie. Just look at the way they pulled the golf balls out of the hole. Stuart Sink pulled his out, waved to the crowd, held his arms up, kissed the golf ball, and walked off. Tom Watson's shoulders were slumped. He pulled the ball out and sort of moped off of the green. I think that summed it up right there. If you were looking for a way to predict who was going to win that playoff, that's the best way I can think of.
Yeah, great point, Brandel. Obviously, Watson fell into the playoff, and Sink got himself into the playoff by good play. So it's almost like Sink was happy to be in the playoff, and Watson was disappointed to be in the playoff.
Absolutely. Watson felt like it was his tournament,
right.
And he could have ended it right there with that last stroke. And so, it takes him a little while, just emotionally, to get over the disappointment of missing that putt.
Brandel, the biggest story early on during the week, obviously Tom Watson became the biggest story over the weekend, but on Friday, the story was Tiger Woods missing the cut by a single stroke, 71 on Thursday, 74 on Friday, and I'll tell you what, during that second round on Friday, he hit some shots that I have never seen him hit, some really bad swings, especially that tee shot on 10. He, it seemed like he kind of popped up a 5-wood. It went right. They could never find it. He had to re-tee and ended up making a double there. What's going on with Tiger right now? Where's his game at?
Well, that golf course, I think, got in his head. All the bunkers that they added, for the most part, were out there at about 290 to 320 down the right side of the fairway. It was almost like they put those bunkers in with one guy in mind. I mean, Tiger Woods obviously averages about that far off the tee, and his miss predominantly is to the right. So in the back of his mind, I'm sure, on every swing was don't miss right, or at least it looked that way. And we were given some hints as to the disorganized nature of his golf swing on Thursday when he hit that fat second shot at the 17th hole. He has a tendency, when he's not swinging his best, to get the club laid off, get his left wrist bowed, and to dip down into the ball on his downswing. And he was doing all three of those. And it's just almost impossible to save it. In the past, he could hit it in the rough and get it out of the rough, and he would generally have 4 par 5s to sort of right the ship. And as soon as Tiger Woods can right the ship and get it going and get something to build on, well, he can tear off into the sunset. But there were only 2 par 5s on this golf course. So he didn't have two holes to sort of right the ship, and the rough was too big a penalty, and there were too many bunkers down the right side. So you put all that into the mix, and it spells trouble for Tiger Woods.
Yeah, Tiger tends to not play as well on courses that don't offer as many par fives. I believe only one of his 14 majors has been won on a par 70 setup.
Yeah, but, it's two. Yeah, he's
is
won
it two.
Okay. And he's played, you know, if you look at his winning percentage in major championships, it's just a smidge under 30% of the time. When he tees it up, he wins a major, which is identical to his winning percentage on the regular tour. But if you if par drops down to 70, his winning percentage is 11%. So it's a drastic drop in winning percentage the minute he loses two par fives to beat up. 11% is still good, but there are other players with as good a winning percentage on par 70 golf courses, or even better, like Padraig Harrington and Retief Goosen come to mind. So he becomes a little bit more of a mortal when he doesn't have two par fives to beat up.
Russ Evans with you, Golf Exchange, presented by the Honda Classic, and joined on the line by Golf Channel analyst Brandel Chamblee. And Brandel, just two more things before I let you go, and they refer to an article in this week's Golf World magazine by Jaime Diaz. Jaime does a great job, as always, and has an article titled Lessons of Turnberry, and he makes two really interesting points in this article, and I want to run both of them by you. First of all, relative to Tom Watson, he says, Tom Watson's reputation as a player is adjusted upward, showing how much game he still has at this age, retroactively raises our assessment of just how much game he had in his prime. In other words, he was better than we thought. What do you think about that statement?
Yeah, I would agree with that. You know, he won 8 majors in 8 years, and you thought he would continue on after 1983, but, you know, in spite of the fact that from 1983 to Turnberry, he had 20 top 10s in major championships after 1983, just wasn't able to close the deal. You know, I have no problem putting him in the probably easily the top 10 that have ever played the game, maybe just a few upwards of that. But, you know, once you get past the four that really nobody ever argues about, Bobby Jones, Ben Hogan, Jack Nicklaus, and Tiger Woods, everybody will say pretty much the four that I've ever played. And depending on where you sit on the fence on those guys, you know, you can argue the merit of every single one of them. But beyond that, it sort of falls into Arnold Palmer, Gary Player, and Tom Watson. This will, I think, just be not a footnote, because that lessens it. If he'd have won it, it would have been different. And sadly, that's the enormity of winning or losing. This will forever be one of the things that you talk about Tom Watson when you talk about him. In the past, if you'd have said Tom Watson, people would have said the duel in the sun, first and foremost, and then they would have said 1982 U.S. Open, and then they would have said 8 majors. Now then it's going to be probably duel in the sun, might be doing battle with what some people called duel in the sunset, which is this event. I'm not sure who called it that, but it was a brilliant take on it.
Yeah, that's clever.
But yeah, very, very clever. And but at any rate, I mean, this is going to add to his legacy. It's also going to continue to sort of break down the age barrier that people thought existed. We're going to see players win majors in their 50s. If not next year, it's going to be pretty soon. I mean, you're going to see Vijay Singh enter into his 50s. Well, he still has that long, languid move, still capable of bombing it out there. He'll find a week when he's hitting on all cylinders, and he'll very likely win a major championship when he's in his 50s. If Tiger Woods is still hungry, Tiger Woods will be winning major championships when he's in his 50s. We're going to see it.
Yeah, I agree with you. I do think we'll see that, Brandel, sometime soon. Last point that Jaime Diaz makes in his article, Lessons of Turnberry, kind of looking back to what did we learn last week at the British Open. He says, the last round at Turnberry provided a revealing snapshot of the current era of golfers, and frankly, it exposed them as wanting. For all of their power and superior physiques and technical proficiency, the evidence keeps suggesting that they, as a group, in parentheses, with one giant exception, obviously alluding to Tiger, are competitively softer and less accomplished shot makers than their predecessors. And I'm curious what you think about that statement.
Well, I couldn't agree more with it. You know, as a guy sitting on the outside watching, you know, it's painful to say it because I was part of this generation. But you know, money does strange things to people. It makes them a little softer, and it makes them a little bit more complacent with rare exceptions. And I think that's true of every generation. It's not just true of this one. It would have been true of the generation in the 60s, the 50s, the 40s. We're going all the way back. They just did not have the kind of money in the game back then that we have now. Everybody that plays the game is a millionaire. So they take vacations in the Mediterranean, and they tear their ACLs, and they go skiing, and they break their femurs. They do all. They have all these. Hogan never took a vacation in the Mediterranean on a sailboat towards ACL. I'm not ripping the guys. It's just a byproduct of having the money. And when you go to the range and you're broke, you have a different attitude. When you go to the range and you've got a G5 waiting for you and $100 million in the bank, it's just you're broke. You're desperate. And you go to work. You don't punch the cell phone and talk to your buddies about when you're going to have dinner, and you're not texting your friends about the baseball game you saw last night. You put your head down, and you pay attention to where your shots are going, and you dig it out of the dirt yourself. That generation, Arnold Palmer, Ben Hogan, Gary Player, Tom Watson, Lee Trevino, they were tough, and they stole major championships away from the greatest player of all time, in my estimation. That's Jack Nicklaus. And if they hadn't stolen him, Tiger Woods would have, he'd be chasing, 25 major championships instead of 18. He'd be well behind. This generation has some talented golfers and some wonderful personalities, but I don't think they stack up to the players that I've just mentioned.
I agree with you, Brandel, and it's not just older guys being cantankerous and taking shots at younger guys. I'm 32, and I agree that this generation, and kind of like my contemporaries as far as when you talk about ages of the players on tour, they are kind of soft. A guy like Tim Clark, he's won over $10 million, and not to just single out Tim Clark, but he's a perfect example of what you're talking about. He's won over $10 million in his PGA Tour career and has never won a tournament on tour. But I do want to come back to what you mentioned just real briefly before I let you go. Nicklaus, greatest player of all time. Do you think Nicklaus will always be the greatest player in your estimation, even if Tiger passes him majors numbers-wise and career wins overall-wise?
Yeah, I don't just think it's a numerical judgment. So Tiger Woods gets to 19 and that's it. He's the greatest player of all time. I think you take into account the entire record. Jack Nicklaus won 18 major championships. He finished second 19 times. Those 19 count in my book. That means he was close to winning 40 major championships. And when you consider the players, the talent and the tenacity of the group that he played against, I think that Jack Nicklaus, in my opinion, far and away is the best golfer who ever lived. Tiger Woods is not, he's done amazing things, don't get me wrong. And the PGA Tour owes a lot to him. The Golf Channel owes a lot to him. Everybody who's even watched golf owes a lot to him. But he hasn't maintained, the close finishes in major championships. He hasn't come from behind to win major championships. He's done some marvelous things. And I have no problem putting him a smidge below Jack Nicklaus. But, we have to wait until the career is over. You're talking about judging somebody mid-career, and it's not over yet. I mean, Tiger Woods is 33 years old. He may play this game till he's 50. And at that point, he may have 30 major championships. And he may have 15 second places. And then, you sit back and you go, wow, what an amazing man that was. But right now, he's mid-flight. So at this point, I mean, Jack Nicklaus's record far surpasses Tiger Woods.
He is Golf Channel analyst Brandel Chambly. Always does a phenomenal job on television pretty much each and every night on the Golf Channel, and always does a great job when he joins us here on Golf Exchange. Brandel, thank you so much for the time, as always. We'll talk to you soon.
You bet. You guys have a nice day, and talk to you soon.
All right, there he is, Brandel Chambly.